Hello and welcome to the third episode of the Investigate Europe podcast. It is Thursday, 26 November 2020. My name is Oliver Woldenhauer. I am the Executive Director of Investigate Europe. This podcast is where my colleague Sinturi Nandakumar and I talk to our journalists about their most recent findings and look behind the scenes of investigative cross-border journalism. Today's podcast is the first one about our three-year investigative project, Secrets of the Council. The Council of the European Union, also known as the Council of Ministers, is most likely the least well-known part of the EU legislative procedure. It is here where the member states come together to vote on EU law, which needs their consent as well as the one of the European Parliament. The Council is also the least transparent of EU institutions. The citizens of the EU's member states usually don't know how their government acts in the many secret negotiations at the Council and its more than 150 working groups. Last year, Investigate Europe started a multi-year investigation of the Council. We are following specific laws through the many-year process in that Council. Today, we are talking about one specific, very important case regarding international tax law, the proposed transparency law known as country-by-country reporting. Let me welcome my colleague Paolo Pena from Lisbon. Paolo has been working as a journalist for more than 20 years. He has been a senior reporter for some of the major newsrooms in Portugal, Bijao, Publico and Diário de Noticias. He did investigative journalism also about the banking crisis about 10 years ago. Paolo is one of the founding members of Investigate Europe back in 2016. Hi, Paolo.
Hi, Oliver.
What is CBCR and why is it important?
So it's an acronym for country by country reporting, and it's something that the European Union has been doing for a long time with banks and other companies. And this time this directive aims to, well, to try to understand the tax planning of the big multinational companies that work in the European Union but don't have they are not European companies, they are transnational multinational companies. And this is quite important because we are talking about companies that have more than 750 million revenues a year. And we are talking about, just for our listeners to understand, some of the major online tech platforms like Google, Amazon, Facebook, etc. To understand how they do their tax planning is important, and this directive's aim is only to understand it, not to do anything about it, just to get a good picture of how they do tax planning. And tax planning, as you know, it is an important issue in Europe for a long time, since the crisis, because we know that these big multinational companies use letterbox companies and use tax haven addresses just to avoid paying the taxes they should. And this is the problem, because we know, and we quote the economist Gabriel Zuckman from Berkeley. His team made a calculation that about 40% of all corporate profits worldwide are shifted to such tax haven.
So if I understand correctly, this is about the fact that multinational corporations can choose to declare their profits in a country with a low tax rate, like maybe Ireland.
Yeah.
And thereby a lot of revenue is lost that can be used to do important social services.
We are always talking about how rich and well-governed countries are, with all the rules about the public budgets, etc., etc. But for instance, in Portugal, and it was a very important issue during the crisis, a big part of all the listed companies in the stock market in Portugal, which are Portuguese companies working in Portugal, had their tax addresses in Holland, for instance. Mm-hmm. When we are debating inside the European Union about taxes and budgets, etc., we tend to forget that we leave these kind of loopholes for companies to move around to the places where taxes are low and avoiding paying their contribution to to the societies where they are. We don't understand the micro scale of the problem unless we understand also the large scale of the problem. And when we are talking about poor countries, probably those countries wouldn't be so poor if other countries, like the ones we mentioned already, like Ireland, Holland, etc., didn't use these tax dumping schemes to attract big companies to be there.
Paulo, you mentioned Holland, but isn't Holland, the Dutch government, aren't those the people who always talked about how bad the Greek government is managing their taxes and how other countries should be better behaving?
Yes, and this is probably the most hypocritical thing that we can assist or see in the European debate, because we are talking about frugal countries or countries that are very concerned about public expenditure and budgets, etc. But we don't have any kind of agreement between the European Union member states to avoid tax dumping or to avoid internal tax evasion. It's impossible for us to have a good debate about public expenditure without solving this bigger problem, which is tax dumping inside the European Union.
So from what you said, I understand this country by country reporting is just a measure to have transparency about where corporations declare their taxes and where they pay their taxes.
Yes.
That would be just the first step, but it could help, huh? Because it gives, once you have transparency, you can have debate and you can do public naming and shaming. So how did this come about? I understand the Commission came up with a proposal first.
It's a proposal from the Commission that follows many other examples of country-by-country reporting. For instance, in 2015, after the crisis, the banking system is obliged to participate in a country-by-country reporting of their tax planning. This was instrumental and important for the banking debate inside Europe and for the banking union also. And the aim is only to understand how these companies are using either some countries that have, well, let's be simple about it, tax dumping, and also because inside the European Union, you have a lot of tax havens. You have a lot of offshore places where companies can register and pay almost no taxes. This was true even more when the UK was inside the European Union, because, you know, the UK has several offshore registers. Yeah. But it's also true for Portugal, because Portugal has one in the Madeira Island, and you have lots of examples of this.
Today is 2020. 2016 came the proposal. I understand it's not law yet. Why?
That's a very difficult question to answer, because the European Union has a very complicated legislative procedure. People probably heard about it because you have the Commission with the ability to propose laws, but the lawmakers are the Parliament and the Council. Investigate Europe is doing a big research that started this year about the Council itself. But what happened this time was that the Commission proposed the directive, the European Parliament approved it, and then the Council blocked it.
Can you explain a little bit, sorry for the policy wonks out there who already know this, but what is the council?
Well, we could stay an hour talking about that, because we have a lot of councils also in Europe.
Yeah.
But the European Union Council is the place where, well, it's a law-making institution inside the European Union where the countries are, the member states are represented, and that debate with the Parliament the way to approve or to reject the proposals that come from the Commission. So you have basically a very, very big body of people with thousands of people working for member states delegations. Most of them are diplomats, some of them are civil servants. They work, but you don't recognize their faces and you don't access their public debate, because there is no public debate about their choices.
What I understand is for European law to come into power, it needs to be voted by Parliament. That's what we know also from our national systems, but it also needs to be voted by the Council, where the ministers of the member states sit. And please tell me if that's correct. What I understand is you need 65% of the population plus 55% of the countries voting in favor of a law on the council to become it into effect, yeah?
Yes, and in some specific cases like tax laws, which is not the case of CBCR, but we can talk about that later if you want to go into detail. But for tax laws, if you want to change the way taxes are collected, you have to have unanimous vote.
The situation, coming back to the country-by-country reporting, is that the Commission proposed a law. It was favorably seen by Parliament. Now, for many years, it is sitting in the Council of the European Union. So who is blocking? What's happening?
It's also a long story. Since the beginning, since the law was delivered to the council for the council's approval, you had some countries who were declaring that although this is not a change in a tax law, so it's just a reporting directive, mm-hmm. you would need a unanimous vote to do that. We know at the same time that this is an impossible achievement because it's impossible to have a unanimous vote on country-by-country reporting because the countries who benefit from the tax planning of these multinationals don't want to end that situation. But then you also had countries that were using this strategy to avoid just saying that they were against the directive. And probably that was Portugal's case. We still don't know exactly what happened because it's a very strange thing. But Portugal was also among the countries who said that this directive couldn't be approved without an unanimous vote.
That's surprising. I mean, the Portuguese government declares itself to be a progressive one. They talk about how tax evasion is the problem, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They have it written on their government program. They have it written everywhere in their, in all their campaigns, they talk about that. And they are very sensitive to what we talked before about how some member states inside the European Union are using tax dumping to collect taxes from Portuguese companies, etc. So this was a completely difficult thing to understand because the Portuguese government has a public speech and it was behaving inside the council in a very dubious way. They were doing it because they were very comfortable about doing it because nobody can really know what happens inside the council because all these debates, these preparatory meetings, these talks between member states are not public. We all know that democracy needs transparency and that the legislative decision-making is a public matter.
Democracy dies in darkness.
Yes.
What I know is that Investigate Europe, through your article, Paulo, was the first one to make this public in Portugal, the behavior of the Portuguese government. How did you know? How did you find out?
I have to thank an European Parliament member, the Green German Sven Giegold, who was able to find out who were the countries that were blocking this directive inside the council. And he had a list. And in that list, there was Portugal, which was very surprising for me, and not only for me, because the European Parliament members from the party that is in the government of Portugal, which is the Socialist Party from the SND group, they all voted in favor of the directive. So they were
In Parliament?
In Parliament, yeah.
In the European Parliament?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they were completely, they couldn't believe that their government, their party's government, was doing the exact opposite of what they did in Parliament.
So how did they react when you made that public and wrote an article? I think it was end of last year.
Yeah, November.
How did they react to that?
They couldn't believe that this was true, and they stated a lot of things about the contradiction between what the party defends and what the government was defending. And suddenly, after that first article, the Portuguese government changed the vote and said,
"Oh, they did indeed."
Yes. And they said that something happened inside the council and it was probably a mistake. And they decided to vote in favor of the directive. And this was very funny because this all happened in a few days. And the Finnish presidency, who was trying to take the directive to a vote, only takes the directive to a vote if they know there is the possibility for the law to be approved. Because if they have the calculation that the vote will be a negative one, they don't take it to a vote and they expect the member states to debate a little more and reach an agreement. But this time, with the Portuguese change of position, there was a majority in the council to approve the directive. So they took it to a vote. And the Portuguese minister voted in favor, but then it reached the Croatian minister, who didn't ever say inside the council that they were against the directive. Mm-hmm. Probably they said the opposite, but we don't have access because the council denied the access to all the database of the minutes of the debate. When the Croatian minister voted, it voted no. And this was a surprise. The Finnish presidency stopped the meeting and suspended the vote.
Yeah. But let me come back a minute to what you said about Portugal, because, I mean, that's very significant, yeah? And for me, who I sit there and do the organizational stuff for Investigate Europe, it was very, very fulfilling to see that there's actually an impact we are having with our journalism.
It's one of those cases where you can really impact, because when you deliver to the public knowledge something that is a secret, a well-kept secret, you can really see that only the publicity of the secret can change things and can address the problem.
So talking about secrets, we were just at the Croatian minister who changed their mind and stopped the vote this year. The first half of this year. Do we know anything how this came about?
We know a lot, but we should know more. And that's always a problem inside the council. We know that the German economy minister, Mr. Altmaier, contacted his Croatian colleague and they talked about this directive in particular. We know that because we asked this to the German government and we got the answer, the official answer, that this was one of the subjects of the talk. And this all happened a few days before the vote.
And the German government, especially Altmaier's CDU party, is against country-by-country reporting.
Not the German government, but yes, this is also a complicated issue because Germany is neutral. Germany is not voting pro or con this directive because inside the German government, there is a clear opposition between the SPD party, the minority coalition member, who is in favor of the directive, and the CDU-CSU, who are against it. So the German government decided to be neutral on this. What we found was that the German government was not neutral. When you have the economy minister, Mr. Altmaier, which is from the opposition party to the directive inside the German government, talks to his Croatian colleague and apparently convinces him to change his vote, he is doing a clear political move to change the way a country votes in a directive in which Germany is a neutral player.
Since the 1st of July, Germany has the presidency of the Council of the European Union. Them being neutral here, does it mean they are really helpful in negotiating and bringing this forward?
No, on the contrary, because being neutral demanded the German presidency to be acting accordingly to the European common interest. If you have a majority in the council, you should take something to a vote. And in this case, in the CBCR case, there was again a majority because there was another big change. The Austrian government was against the directive, but the Austrian parliament took a resolution and decided that the government should vote in favor of the CBCR directive. And so the Austrian government is now in favor of the directive, which brings the majority back to the council. But we are now in the German presidency. And the German presidency, knowing that there is a majority vote to approve the directive, should take this to the agenda and put it to a vote. But the German government doesn't do that. And it's very awkward, even for the German government, because you have ministers of the German government, like Mr. Scholz, who have to answer questions saying that, well, we should take this to a vote, but no, we cannot take this to a vote yet, etc., etc., etc. There was even an attempt to approve a resolution in the Bundestag by the Green Party to make the German government schedule this vote in the European Union Council, and the vote was rejected. The resolution was rejected with the votes of the SPD, which are in favor of the directive. So the SPD is in favor of the directive and had to vote against the scheduling of the council vote. So this is all very strange. We cannot really understand why big parties are behaving like this, contradicting what they are saying in public.
What we have is that the country-by-country reporting directive hasn't been passed yet, is still under discussion, taking a very long time. There's also a very interesting story that our colleague Sigrid wrote down about why the progressive Swedish government is also part of helping blocking this. Paolo, you mentioned several times when you talked about this story, you used a lot of language like, and then we heard, and then this MEP said,
Don't we know? I mean, if there's a discussion in Parliament, be it l'Assemblée Nationale in Paris or the same in Warsaw or the Bundestag, we have minutes we can listen to. Mm-hmm. How's it going in the Council of the European Union?
Inside the Council, you have a secrecy policy. There is no other way to call it. You have countries that report with minutes to their governments, but both the Council and the member states don't usually turn public those minutes, and so we don't have the ability to follow the debates inside the Council. There are a few exceptions for this, like some mm-hmm. Nordic countries, for instance, Sweden, you mentioned before. Journalists, for instance, can use the Freedom of Information Acts and try to access the minutes. But most of the times when you do that, and if you are able to reach the minutes, you will have the positions of each member states blackened.
That means if you want to inform, say, the Portuguese citizens how their government is acting, which is like really central to democracy, you have to rely on hearsay and like internal avenues?
Or other countries' minutes.
Okay.
Yes. Let's forget, for instance, CBCR. And I'm going to publish in a few days another story which is more or less the same. I don't think anybody in Portugal knew that the Portuguese government from the beginning was against the rule of law mechanism that is being debated inside the Council. Nobody talked about that from the Portuguese government. There was no kind of hearing of the parties in the national parliament or a public debate about it. On the contrary, for instance, again, the members of the socialist delegation in the European Parliament voted in favor of the rule of law mechanism.
What you're talking about, Paolo, the rule of law mechanism is to strengthen the rights of citizens within union vis-a-vis governments like the Polish one or the Hungarian one, isn't it?
Yes, it's the rule the European Union is debating for a long time. It's also a commission proposal from 2018. There was a big majority inside the European Parliament to approve it. And mm-hmm. we all know the problem, which is we have reports from the European Parliament about Hungary from 2012 on. And we all know that the chance to apply Article 7 of the treaties, which is the atomic bomb to deal with the democracy problem in Hungary, for instance, is a very difficult one to use because you can mm-hmm. you need to have a unanimous vote in the Council. Well, the country that is being subjected to it doesn't vote, mm-hmm. but it's easy to get a cross veto. And yeah. some other country that vetoes something because they will get something in exchange or because they are also concerned that this can apply to them, etc., etc. So this was another way to deal with the problem because we know that there are significant changes in the judicial information system, etc., in those countries that are really putting in danger the way we see society as a democracy inside yeah. the European Union.
This is another case you're saying where the Portuguese government is doing something different in the Council than their publicly stated policy. And we only know about that from hearsay.
We know about that because we had access to the minutes of some countries, which we tried to get either by Freedom of Information Acts or by contacting sources that could deliver us the minutes themselves or some information about the meetings, etc. Mm-hmm. It's impossible for us to follow these debates inside the Council with proofs, with documents, because the Council is able to say that they are not going to make public their decision-making process. We heard from several people we interviewed, like a former Attorney General at the European Court of Justice, who says that this is completely a violation of Article 15 of the treaty. We have done several interviews with people who are very knowledgeable about the legislative process inside the Council or that are law professors, etc., that tell us that this is a breach of the European law.
Reading through our articles, what I found really interesting was the quotes by Emily O'Reilly, the EU ombudsperson. She says, public disclosure of member states' positions in a timely and accessible manner can help reduce the alienation of citizens from the EU institutions. It can also help clarify that decisions on legislation taken at EU level are ultimately taken by elected representatives and not by so-called faceless bureaucrats. And she also says, that the council, in one of her reports, that the council should systematically record the identities of member states expressing positions in preparatory bodies. Would that help?
Of course. And I think the ombudswoman is very clear when she relates this secrecy feature of the council with the rise of the populist voices against the European Union, or the way bureaucrats take decisions in our backs, etc., etc., because this is actually a problem. You have the ability to do something that it's completely, well, against the way you see democracy, because countries are not expressing their own positions. They are playing because they know that they won't be scrutinized. They won't be held accountable for what they did in the council.
So what you're saying is more transparency in the council could actually help the connection between the citizens and the European Union. Governments would have to act closer to what they publicly say.
If the voters in one of the member states know exactly what their government is doing inside the council, they can force that government to act differently.
Can you tell, for closing of this podcast, what are your new plans? What are the plans for the future to work on the secrecy of the council of the European Union?
Our aim is to be able to create a public information and a public speech about Europe that is not biased by national prejudices or by wrong information. And the Council is very, very important in this sphere, because we notice that the Council is probably the subject that the European people know less about. So it's important for us to deliver information about that, because it's, well, a lawmaking body of the European Union, but also because we are able here to address some very, very important issues that affect all our lives and are kept in secrecy. We plan for the next years to be able to work permanently on some of the aspects of the Council, and also on concrete decisions that the Council is blocking.
Thank you, Paolo. Obrigado.
Thank you.
I'm really excited to hear more from our Secrets of the Council project. For Investigate Europe, it's also something new, because it's a three-year ongoing project. And also what is here a first for us, that we have a dedicated group of individual small donors who give every month money to support this specific project that Paolo just spoke about. Thank you very much for listening into this podcast, and hope to see you, hear you next time when my colleague Sinduri is hosting the next podcast. Goodbye.
Hi, I am Elisa Simantke, the editorial director of Investigate Europe. I very much believe in our reporters' in-depth, independent and cross-border reporting, which is only possible because we receive donations by foundations and people like you. So, if you like what you read and what we do, it would be great if you go to our website, click on donate, and help us to do even much more with your 5 and 10 euros a month. Thank you so much.